Hey, this is Roslyn. Please do me a favor and tap on the links that are shared in the episode notes. What's up? You are now listening to Americanized, a storytelling podcast where you will hear from eclectic first and second generation Americans share their stories and real life experiences as children of immigrants. Today's guest is Oksana Kukurja. She is the daughter of Ukrainian refugees and she lives in New York. Oksana has written about her story in two anthologies, Going Against the Grain and Think Limitlessly. She is now working on her upcoming narrative nonfiction book called Sunflowers Bend But Rarely Break. She shares her family's experiences during World War II and the Cold War era. Oksana explores the hardships her parents face by uncovering historical events often overlooked, such as their experiences as 2 of 13 million forced laborers in Nazi Germany. This book is a testament to the resilience and strength of the Ukrainian people. Stick around to hear her story. Oksana, thank you so much for joining and being on the show. It's so nice to finally meet you and see your face in motion after reading so much about you and all that you've done.
Well, thank you, Rosalind, so much for having me on your podcast. I do appreciate it. I've got quite a passion for sort of this whole American experiment that we have going.
Yes, it's definitely a bubble that I also love digging into and finding different people who share similar experiences, but also very much different experiences. Reading more about you, I could see that we do share that label of being a first generation American, but it sounds like your background and your story is much different than mine and just the generational gaps as well. Can you share a little bit about your story just as an overall, where you came from and how you got to where you are now?
Sure, happy to do that. So I consider myself a first generation American, which means I was born in the United States. I didn't immigrate from a different country. However, I am the youngest of 12 children, and my parents did immigrate from Germany, but they were originally from Eastern Europe, from what is a country that we now call Ukraine. But back when they were born, it was a part of the country of Poland. And as a daughter of immigrants and growing up in a very large family up in upstate New York, I definitely understood the challenges of growing up in a home where a foreign language was spoken and we had a different culture from an American culture. So my parents would cook Ukrainian food and we would celebrate Ukrainian traditions as well as Ukrainian religious holidays. I wasn't Orthodox. I grew up Ukrainian Catholic, but we celebrated the same holidays as on the Greek Orthodox system. And so I knew what it felt like to feel like I lived in two different worlds as I was growing up. So one world in an Eastern European world and then one foot in an American world. And at the end of the day, it ended up making my youth even more blessed and fuller than probably the average American experience. But I have to admit, you know, when I stepped in my American world, it could be hard to fit in because I did feel different and I couldn't help that. But I ended up going away to school to a college called Boston University in Boston. And it's just such a amalgamism of people from all over the world. And it was really the first place where I really felt like I belonged somewhere. And I belonged as a part of some international clubs as well at Boston University. And then I started traveling a lot. And then after school, joined the business world. I have a CPA. I worked in public accounting and then went back to school and got my MBA and then have been in management consulting for over 22 years. Most recently, I spent my last 12 years with a very large technology firm where I was a managing director. And so I do believe that almost immigrant experience. I'm not an immigrant, but was raised by immigrants. I think it helped me to be more open-minded and to be able to embrace people from all different kinds of walks of life in the United States, as well as around the world in my work. And so I believe that it's made me a better, not only business person, but a better manager of people.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And it's definitely a blessing in that way, where we can kind of understand people on different levels and give grace where grace needs to be given.
Mm-hmm. And just be curious. I found, because I did have this different culture at home from outside of home, that it just made me very curious about people. So when I did notice someone having a different background from mine or looked different from me, I was just always curious to find out, you know, where are you from? You know, why do you think the way you do? And it was never in a bad way. It was just more of a curiosity factor. I mean, I know people are different from me and I want to know how they are and what they are and, you know, why they have the perspective that they have. And, you know, the other fundamental thing I found in a lot of my travel, because I do a lot of travel, Rosalyn, as well as when I'm not working, mm-hmm. is that I found, even though people are different all over the globe, that, you know, foundationally we're the same because we're all human beings and we have the same philosophies in general, you know, and the same ethics and the same beliefs. You know, we care about our families. You know, we care about our religion. We, you know, care about where we come from, and we care about, you know, in general, you know, treating people around us with dignity and respect.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. At the core, we are more alike than we are different. And I'm mm-hmm. with you on the curiosity piece and mm-hmm. that question of where are you from? I'm really passionate about that too. And I just love knowing more about a person through that lens as well.
Yeah. And I know we have to be careful when we ask those kinds of questions, because we don't want Americans that may not look the stereotypical, you know, originating from Europe Americans to feel as if they're not Americans. So I always try to be careful about that too. Like, it's never, oh, where are you from? It's more of, you know, where do you originally originate, right? Because just about everyone, unless you are an indigenous American, you have to have some sort of origin story, you know, regardless if it goes all the way back to the Mayflower of, you know, almost every one of us, except for those indigenous people, you know, came from some other country and would have some sort of an origin story.
Right. Even those who claim America so hard, they did come from somewhere as well. If you're not indigenous, then you're not like a true American, I guess.
Exactly. Yes.
I feel like, as exciting as this topic is, I feel like I tiptoe a lot around the wording and the phrases, just because you got to be politically correct and you don't want to offend anybody.
But exactly.
I'm curious, with your family, 12 siblings is a lot. I thought I had a lot of siblings. There's 5 of us. Where do you fall in the 12?
I am number 12. So oh. I was the last that my parents had. And that's all I can say is they were good Catholics.
Okay, that's an interesting dynamic then, being the last born, the youngest, and then mm-hmm. looking into your family, it seems like you share a lot about your parents' story and mm-hmm. their history.
Mm-hmm.
What were you exposed to? What did you see? And how do you feel that shaped your identity?
Yeah, so my parents were pretty closed up because they were from Eastern Europe. There's generally that stereotype, which isn't unfounded in a lot of ways, because I can feel it as well. Where Eastern Europeans, Ukrainians tend to be very stoic and guarded people, especially when you initially meet them and it takes a little while for them to open up. And with my parents in particular, they were even more guarded than I would say, you know, the average Ukrainian or Eastern European, because of the trauma that they faced when they were very young. I knew a little bit about my parents' story while they were alive. My mother would talk about her origin story, you know, of being born and raised in the Ukrainian part of Poland, and how she ended up in Germany through a 3-month work visa, and then they wouldn't let her go home. And she would tell me a little bit about the hardships of the work that she did, but it really wasn't until I was a senior in high school at the time. So I was almost on my way to college and I was filling out my college forms and I needed to write creative essays in school. And I asked to interview my mother about her experience during Nazi Germany because we learned so much about the Holocaust and the death and destruction caused by the Nazis. And I wanted to understand a little bit better if and what my mother had seen at that time, that point in time when she was working there. And I learned quite a bit from my interview with her around her hardships, that she not only wasn't allowed to go home, they took away her paperwork, but that she lived and worked in guarded camps and worked on a farm, worked in a greenhouse. And then towards the end of the last year and a half of the war, she worked in a bomb factory. And so I knew that she really didn't get paid much and she had hardships, and she even worked at this bomb factory with concentration camp victims and even, you know, saw what they were undergoing during the war. But it wasn't until after the war broke out between Russia and Ukraine, you know, Russia invading Ukraine in February of 2022, that my mother's stories were resonating so much with me, because she talked about the bombings during the war, and she talked about being, you know, in internment camps and not having her freedom. And as I was watching what was happening in Ukraine during the war, it reminded me so much of her experiences. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, it's happening all over again. This feels like we're in World War II again. And instead of it being Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin, we have, you know, our new dictator of choice or not choice, Vladimir Putin. And that's what made me realize that I needed to put their story on paper, and I needed to find a way to not only write the story, but to get it published and get it out there for people to see that, you know, we could be on the cusp of World War III and not even realize it, and maybe even be sleepwalking our way there, because so much of what's happening in our global society today with, you know, new immigration happening, right? And displacement of people. And there's new isolationism in the United States and in Europe happening. There's risk of autocracy, not only in Europe, but also potentially in the United States with what happened in January 6th, you know, in a potential second Trump term. And I'm thinking to myself, this seems so much like the 1930s again. And we need more voices to raise those concerns in the United States and in Europe so that we don't slow walk ourselves into a World War III. Like, I sincerely believe we slow walked ourselves into World War II, because there's so much evidence that if Europe hadn't appeased Hitler, hadn't given Hitler Czechoslovakia, hadn't let him rearm the Rhineland, that there probably wouldn't have been a World War II. And so what do we, the United States, or even as a global society, what do we need to do to effectively deter Vladimir Putin from going any further in Ukraine or going past Ukraine to a NATO country? Because then we will be in World War II again. You know, or if China's ZG sees United States weakness or European weakness and goes after China, or goes after Taiwan. I feel like we're, you know, we're just in a place right now that's a little insecure for me and probably for a lot of people. And so, you know, what can I, as a small person, average Ukrainian American, do but to beat the drum through my parents' story. And as I've done more research, because there's a little bit more information out there about the forced labor experience, that it was pretty horrendous. And my parents didn't tell me the horrors of how Eastern European forced laborers were treated in Nazi Germany, that they weren't just, you know, put into these, you know, labor camps where they were watched and guarded, that many of them were starved, not unlike concentration camp victims. And, you know, a good portion of them lost their lives, or, you know, were worked very hard and were, you know, were tortured and humiliated. And it's this, you know, very, I would say, little known or unknown experience that is around the Holocaust that many people don't know about, that I really want to shine a light on, not only to give those victims a voice, because right now I don't believe they have one, but then also to say, look, let's not let history repeat itself again.
I love what you're doing so much. Not only are you honoring your parents and their stories, but you are exposing history that I personally had no idea about, and I think a lot of people don't know this history. So you're exposing that, sharing awareness, and then also taking action so that we're not sleepwalking into a World War III. And with the war in Ukraine, it seemed to have fizzled out by the media. Like, I'm not seeing that anymore, and I feel like it's almost to the point where, does it exist anymore? Like, it seems like it's not happening because so many other things are happening. And I feel like the media, they highlight things like one at a time, and then it fizzles out, and then there's something else. And it's like, it comes and goes, but it's like a constant. And we don't, maybe it's our generation, our brains just don't.
Yes.
We don't operate that way.
Yes. Yeah. The media is always chasing the newest story, which is really unfortunate, because the war is still going on in Ukraine. People are still dying. Not just soldiers are dying, but also civilians are dying. Russia is still lobbing in missiles and drones at, you know, at civilian targets. Recently, I think last weekend, Kyiv was targeted and children died, more children died. And so it is still going on. And I don't mean to take anything away from what's happening in Gaza. And I don't care which side you're on. I feel for the Israelis that are hostages and the Israelis who lost their lives on October 7th. And I feel for the innocent civilians in Gaza, you know, who are dying from missiles, as well as, you know, who are, you know, under famine at the moment. So I don't mean to take away from other big issues in the world, but we also can't forget what's happening in Ukraine and the people there that are suffering and dying as well.
All right. There are multiple big issues happening at the same time. And just being so like physically distant from it, you can feel so like helpless and hopeless. Are there any resources?
There are definitely ways that we as Americans can help the situation. There are amazing organizations that are supporting Ukraine on the ground. You know, like RASM for Ukraine is a really great organization. It's on the ground in Ukraine. It's providing, you know, help and assistance to the people who need it. The other way that Americans can help, if they really do care about Ukraine, is that there's a petition going on around right now. It's called a discharge for its House resolution. I believe it's called 180, which is the resolution for the aid to Ukraine, Israel, and the Pacific that the Senate passed. And what this discharge resolution would do, if it obtains enough support from House representatives, is it'll force a vote onto the floor for that essential aid for Ukraine. You know, I'm very worried about Ukraine aid at the moment because they're running out of bullets. You know, they're just running out of anything to throw, you know, at the Russians to just keep things at a stalemate. And what Americans can do is just call their representatives or call the representatives that are in their state that haven't signed that discharge petition to ask them to do it. I just called my New York representative from New York State, and I called my New York representatives just yesterday. So that's an easy thing. It's, you know, 5 minutes of a call to make.
Right. And that's something that everyone can do. If you have your phone, you can make a call.
Exactly. And we're all voters, and voting is important. That's the other thing I would say to anyone out there on your podcast. You know, I don't mean to age discriminate, but, you know, if you have younger listeners, you know, sometimes they're not as interested in voting. I mean, even in my 20s, which was 30 years ago, you know, I would only vote for the big presidential elections. And I would just say, you know, regardless of who your listeners are, if they're young or old, just go out and vote. You can make a difference by voting every year as well.
That's right. I love that you made that point that it's not just the presidential elections that matter for voting. It's the small local elections too that I'm personally guilty of overlooking it and like, who are these people? Doesn't matter, but it does matter. Yeah.
And Rosalind, I would say the primaries are important. In some states, the primaries are more important in voting in them than in the general election, because oftentimes, you know, some areas are so gerrymandered that only a Democrat will win or only a Republican will win. And regardless of whose side you're on, you know, go out and vote in the primaries, go out and vote in the general elections every single year from, you know, the top ticket down to your, you know, local ticket. Make sure that, you know, your voice is being represented in the process.
Right. That's great advice, because essentially it is your voice. Even though I feel people feel like they vote and then the country does whatever they want to do, it doesn't matter. But I want to encourage whoever's listening that your voice will be heard and it does matter. It does make an impact.
It does, especially when you call. If you're, this is something I've learned. So to be open and frank, I swear I'm not preaching to the choir. I always voted, but I was not active in really the political process beyond voting until last year when I started to become a volunteer advocate for Ukraine. And I spent a few days in October of last year on Capitol Hill. And when you go to Capitol Hill, and you don't have to, but even when you call your representative, you know, or your senator, and you are a constituent, they listen to you. You're more important than you think because they need your vote. And you could even tell them that. You can say, look, this cause is so important to me, whatever your cause is, and say, you know, my vote's going to be predicated on this issue and this cause. This is how important it is. And you'd be surprised if they know you're a constituent, and they'll know it by the zip code you give them, you know, the address that you give them. You know, they put it in their tally and they pay attention to those things.
Kind of makes me think of why, like how we ended up in America in the first place. Our parents were not, they weren't experiencing a fair government. And they're preached that America is, you know, democracy and the land of the people and our voices matter. And I feel like I just don't take enough advantage of that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I will always thank my parents for, not just finding a way to this country, but my mother told me the story, if you don't mind me sharing, at the end of the war, she was in an area of Germany that had been liberated by the United States. And she missed friends that she had in an area of Germany, outside a city called Magdeburg in what ended up becoming part of East Germany, a GDR. She didn't realize it. It ended up becoming communist Germany. She didn't realize it at the time. So she went to go visit her friends in the city of Magdeburg. And when she got there, she realized that U.S. troops had moved out and the Red Army had moved in. And she was so fiercely anti-communist that she spent 2 weeks in the woods moving from like farmhouse to find her way back to the U.S. Army towards the West, because freedom and liberation was so important to her, you know, and having the ability to live in a country that has free speech, that has free elections, that respects people, you know, regardless of where they come from and, you know, what religion they have and what creed. And we're allowed to do those things. And we really do take them for granted. I'm not saying that our country is perfect, but we have a lot of things, like you said, that don't exist in many other countries. And why our ancestors or our parents or we moved to come here. And we have to protect that.
Absolutely. I love that you said that we have to protect that. We have to acknowledge what we have and protect it and not take it for granted.
Yeah, and not focus on the negative. You know, I think there's also in this, you know, social media world, right, of, you know, what gets the eyeballs, things negative, right? That's what gets the, you know, the interest. And, you know, it's important to criticize our country, and it's important to know that we're not perfect and there's a lot that we need to do to improve ourselves. But we should also just take a step back and, you know, be able to celebrate what we do have and the good that we do have in this country. Not sure we do it enough these days.
I feel like because there's a lot of good, and I don't know why it's hard for me to say this because I kind of latch onto the negatives of America, but because of we're like surrounded by, we're in a free country, you can say. Free-ish, free for the most part, free country.
Free-ish, agreed. Yeah.
More than most countries.
Not completely equal. I would never, ever, you know, make those claims. You know, it's the ideal of what we want to be, our aspiration, but we still have a long way to go to get there.
Yeah. And I think because of that, it's like we see more good than bad. So when there is a bad, we kind of attach ourselves to that and we just don't appreciate the good enough. It's way easier to be negative than positive. So naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So your book is called Sunflowers Bend But Barely Break, and you're still working on it. It's not out yet. Could you share a little bit about the meaning behind that title?
I would love to. It has a lot of personal significance for me, and hopefully it will to your listeners as well. So sunflowers are the national flower of Ukraine. They're also the number one agricultural export for Ukraine in sunflower oil. It also has quite a bit of symbolism because as I read up on it, a lot of people see these sunflowers as, you know, pretty happy flowers, but sunflowers are also very hardy flowers and they'll do anything to get sun. They can't survive without the sun. And so you'll often see them bending in the fields towards the sun, you know, towards those rays of sun, even on cloudy days. And so when I think about my parents' story of being one of, by the way, 13 million forced laborers in Germany, over 6 million of them were Slavs, which is just incredible to think about. I really see them as sunflowers. And one of the, I also see Ukrainians as sunflowers. I remember one in the early days of the war, this really old woman, she was handing out sunflower seeds to Russian soldiers. And they were taking these seeds and saying, oh, thank you, lady. This is so nice of you. And she's like, no, 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 no. This gift is not nice. This is about when you die, these sunflowers are going to grow over your grave. And that's what I think of when I think of sunflowers.
Wow. That's so beautiful. And when you said you see Ukrainians sunflowers, I think my heart smiled right there because the way you described the sunflowers at first and then comparing it to your people was just so beautiful.
Because they've, you know, for hundreds of years, many people don't know much about Ukrainian history, but, you know, for hundreds of years, they were, you know, they were exploited and colonized by other countries, whether it was Poland, Lithuania, or the Russian Empire. And so they've had to learn to be resilient. They've had to learn to bend but not break. And they finally found independence and freedom in 1991. And today they're just fighting to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fighting for those same values that we take for granted here in the United States. And so I don't know why we're not still supporting them. And I really hope that that measure will pass in the House, the Senate measure, and that we'll be able to keep funding them, because I believe they've earned it.
Because like you said, history is repeating itself. And if we know the outcome, we don't want it to repeat itself. We want to do better and be better.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, thank you for sharing those resources too. I'll have to put them in the episode notes.
You're very welcome.
I saw that you had a little sneak peek of your book from chapter 9, an excerpt, and there's mm-hmm. just one sentence that really stuck out to me. You're talking about your mother. Mm-hmm. It read, "I was finally getting to know her and I did not like what I was seeing."
Mm-hmm.
And that just reminded me of a quote that says, "Someday your children are going to figure out who you are, just like you figured out who your parents are as people."
Mm-hmm.
So be sure you're someone that they will be proud of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when we're young, we idolize our parents and we don't see anything bad about them. And, mm-hmm. you know, it isn't until we're a little bit older that, you know, maybe we start to see some of the cracks. And I'm not saying that we can all be perfect for our children, because none of us are. We're all human. I think for me in that moment, you know, I realized that, you know, my mother had a bit of vanity in her that I'd never seen, because she was a mother of 12. I mean, who gets the chance, time to have, to be vain when you're mm-hmm. just trying to have so many mouths to feed? And so I got to see her with her family in Ukraine, whom she helped to support financially for many years while her family was living in the Soviet Union under communism. You know, just the way that they attended to her and treated her. And she just ate it all up. And it wasn't a side of my mother I had ever seen before. And I just had wished that she had shown a little bit more humility in that moment, but she didn't. And we all have our fallacies and our weaknesses. And that just happened to be hers.
Right. I'm curious if that might have stemmed from living in America and being amongst Americans and living that life, do you think, if the timeline matches up?
Maybe. I believe, you know, she had a tough husband, you know, who was, you know, was on the controlling side. So I just saw it more as her family was something that she could control through supporting them financially, and that she liked a bit of that control when she was there. And she also never, you know, and this is normal, children very, very often don't tell their parents how grateful they are for them and for what they do, right? Like, we take them for granted. And so my mother never got any sort of gratitude, you know? And so I think for her, I was, you know, I was harsh in that moment because I was saying it, but, you know, I think she just needed that gratitude and vanity because she just never got it at home.
I see. So grace is given in that moment. Oh, now you can like reflect and give her some grace, which is nice. That's beautiful. When your book comes out, that is something that I will share and would love to read, just to have that information. And I would say your book is a form of activism as well. Keep me posted when it comes out, and I will share that everywhere.
All right. Sounds good. It was so nice meeting you, Rosalind, and good luck to you.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening. Hope to catch you in the next episode. All original music produced by Stubborn Soul. You can find him on all music listening platforms at STBRNSAL.